This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 716-748-0144, or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to Station 2, click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with calling questions for our guests, toll-free USA and Canada, 888-429-5471. With me this evening, the author of The Wandering Who. He is an accomplished musician, a critic of Israel and the Jewish people. He was born in Israel. He was a member of the IDF at a point of his life. His conscience got the better of him. He's been on a mission to expose the wrongdoing of the Jews, not only in Palestine, but around the world. Please help me welcome Gilad Atzmon.
Gilad, welcome to the show. Hello. Thank you, man. Hello. Thank you for your kind words. I'm delighted to be with you.
Gilad, please tell us what compelled you to write The Wandering Who.
The Wandering Who is actually out now for 4 years. As you probably know, I'm actually in the state now to launch my new book, which is actually satirical. But the Wandering Who took me probably 10 years to write. I have been delving into these issues to do with Jewish politics for at least 15 years. I, at a certain stage in my life, realized that something is uniquely wrong with Israel. I was very embarrassed to find out, to start with, that I was living basically on Palestinian land. This wasn't part of our curriculum. We didn't learn about the vast ethnic cleansing that took place in 48. So I realized that this was the case in a later stage of my life. I was a soldier at the time of the first Lebanon War. I witnessed some horrid war crimes. And you have to understand, I came from a patriotic right-wing background. So I was looking forward to be in the army and to serve my country. I have a lot of respect to patriotic people, something that some leftists may find upsetting. But I believe, you know, being a man, I believe that if we are in the right, we believe ourselves to serve the right cause, we should sacrifice. And actually, this is the way I still live. And I start to look into it and realize that the most obvious way to understand the Israeli society, Israeli politics, Israeli ideology, the Jewish lobbies around the world is to scrutinize the most obvious fact about Israel. Israel defines itself as the Jewish state. And each of Israeli political moves is determined by the way they interpret their Jewishness. Now, bizarrely enough, and this is kind of quite fascinating, bizarrely enough, when I started to talk about Israel being the Jewish state and Jewishness, and I started to write some papers about it, the people who were the first to attempt to silence me were not the Israelis, were not the Zionists, they were the Jewish left. And this was a complete breakthrough for me, because for the first time in my life, I understood what is the meaning of Jewish power. The meaning of Jewish power is the definition of Jewish power, as I see it, is the ability to stop us talking about Jewish power, which was fascinating for me. And I realized that the people who take care of that are people like Noam Chomsky, like Democracy Now!, The Real News, Paul Jay, Max Blumenthal, the people who are supposed to be the good people. They just work. They are very, very, very gifted in that art form. You know, this is something that to do with Jewish survival strategy, something that is developed in thousands of years. They're working day and night, concealing the root cause of the problem. They even managed to derail the Palestinian solidarity discourse that even the Palestinians don't know what is their cause anymore. You know, if you would talk to a Palestinian 15 years ago, they all knew that the right of return was the heart of their cause. Now they're confused. They talk about colonialism, about apartheid, about end of the occupation, one state, two state. Instead of having a one strong slogan that is meaningful and implies action, activity in the right direction, they are completely confused. And it was quite a sinister project that was pushed by the Jewish left, by the so-called Jews in the movement, people who were supposed to be our allies.
Right, and these people are pretty much putting out disinformation in a sense, as you're saying. Is that correct?
To start with, you know, we have the right-wing media dominated by Zionists, and many of them rich Zionists. And then we have the dissent media dominated by the twin brothers who are engaged in a concealment of the crimes that are committed by Zionism. They are very careful in what they allow us to think about, what they allow us to delve into. For instance, they start to talk about end of the occupation. Now, end of the occupation is important, but end of the occupation actually legitimizes the Jewish state. Simple.
Right. Right.
They talk about Zionism being colonialism. Zionism is not colonialism, it's never been colonialism. Colonialism is relationship between a mother state and a settler state. But correct. Israel is a settler state, but it doesn't have a mother state. Why do they call it colonialism? To convey the false image that Zionism is as precedent in history, that it's a part of an historical trend, and then the implication is that Jewish nationalism is not different from other nationalist imperialist movement. No, it's wrong. Zionism, the idea that you come to a land after 2,000 years and you tell the indigenous people, sorry, you have to move, we've been here before, is very unusual. It's very right. unusual, you know. And the Jewish left is there to divert the attention from the singularity of this historical movement.
I have a caller from Norway, Mal from Norway.
Okay, I ahead. Have been in Norway. Yeah.
Go ahead, yeah. Mal.
Yeah, thank you very much for allowing me to ask this question, you know. I've read a little about the guest, Gilad, and I wanted to ask him, how does the Israeli left today actually view you, and how do they see the future, you know? do they see the future as having a two-state solution or a one-state solution? And how is that?
To start with, I was talking now about the Jewish left rather than Israeli left. Israeli left is a fantasy. There is no such a thing. There used to be quite a substantial body that regarded itself as a Israeli left. In the last few years, we could still see Meretz, which is a party that was initially was formed by Shulamit Aloni and then Yossi Sarid. But even this party is now largely concerned with LGBT issues, lesbian, gays, rights, and so on and so on. So, in fact, the only universalist left party in Israel is the Arab Party, which is not very surprising because there is a clear contradiction between being a Jew and being a lefty. Left is a universal perception, and Jewishness is a tribal. And universalism and tribalism are like water and oil. So a Jewish leftist is actually an oxymoron. And this is very, very embarrassing. Now, how the Israelis see their the future, as far as I can say, as a person who monitor Israeli press on a daily basis and is commentator on those issues all over the world, I think that they are in a state of denial. They are do whatever they can in order to avoid dealing with these pressing issues because they don't have the solution. I argued many times, and I'll probably talk about it today in my talk here in Denver. If you want to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, all it takes is one sentence. Benjamin Netanyahu should stand up tomorrow and say, hello, everybody. I think that this conflict should end now. I realize that we are living on a land that a lot of Palestinians consider to be their land. And I now, in the open, invite the Palestinians to return to their land. How many Palestinians will return to their land? Big question. I don't know. I'm not sure that a lot. But this would resolve the conflict once and for all. By the way, this is not going to happen because for Israel to take such a move, it must first stop regarding itself as the Jewish state. And this is not something that Israel is going to do voluntarily. So the situation is doomed. And my belief is that it's quite frightening to say it, but Israel has a lot of elements within itself that would lead to the country imploding. It is falling apart.
Oh, well, hopefully it's not falling apart soon enough, but in your book you state...
Actually, I wouldn't mind if it happened tomorrow. And I think that it is falling apart, and eventually it's quite hard to talk about ISIS, you know, because it's quite a new phenomenon and we don't understand it. My belief is that there is an element, stronger impetus of unification in the Arab world, especially in the Sunni world. And I believe that Israel would eventually be left alone to encounter either ISIS, Daesh, or whatever this body is going to evolve into. and they won't stand a chance. But this is not something that's going to happen tomorrow. If I were ISIS military advisor, I would tell them, you know, do whatever you want, you know, keep Israel to the end. And I think that this is what they do.
So do you think that ISIS is actually an Arabic entity, or is it something that's supported by the West and Israel?
I don't have any doubt. I don't have any doubt. I gave it an interview about it yesterday. I don't have any doubt that ISIS, like many of those organizations, was initially a Western plant or an Israeli. We have enough evidence to support it. But as we know, these organizations follow their own dynamics. They have dynamics of their own. And as with the Hamas and with Al-Qaeda, if there is such a thing as Al-Qaeda, definitely Taliban, these bodies at a certain stage start to follow the needs, to provide for the needs of the grassroots and obviously the people. And obviously this never happened to agree with American interest. I think that American administration, funny enough, is fully aware of it. And this is the reason that we see a growing alliance, a building of an alliance with Iran, which I'm very happy.
I've got another call from Israel, Gilad. We have Dana from Israel on line one. Go ahead, Dana.
Shalom, Gilad. How are you?
Hello.
I have been discussing with Professor Falk concerning you, and I wanted really to know, do you really deny the Holocaust? Do you support the destruction of Israel? As a Jewish state?
It's two different questions that are not really related to what we are dealing, but I will address them. They are important questions. A, Holocaust. Have you ever read me, denial of the Holocaust by me?
No, but I did read some stuff that you wrote concerning the Holocaust.
Yeah, I wrote about the Holocaust. So why do you ask whether I deny the Holocaust if you have never seen any?
The question is if you agree that the 6 million of Jews were killed, and when they were killed, nothing happened left of them, they came to their historical land, to Israel, to pick up the pieces, whatever left. Did you ever deny it?
Because Richard, I in principle, argue that history is the ability to rewrite the past as we move along. As we move along, we see things in different light. I believe that the Holocaust should be treated as an historical chapter and rather than as a religion. This is my argument on the Holocaust. This is my campaign. I believe that to be an historian is to be a revisionist. I believe that the work, for instance, Shlomo Zahn produced a rewriting the Zionist narrative is incredible, and I love it. You know, why can't the history of Germany between 39 to 45, or between 33 to 45, or between 22 to 46 be treated the same? Now, why, I may ask you, whether you read anything about me denying the Holocaust? Because it is a very common Jewish trend to silence people. I don't say that you try to silence me. To silence people, calling them anti-Semite and the Holocaust deniers.
You can't be an anti-Semite. Really. You're a Jew. How can you be so concerning the Jews? You're a Jew yourself.
I'm not a Jew for many years. But this is not...
You're not a Jew?
No, I'm not a Jew. This is irrelevant. What I'm saying is that we must be able to ask ourselves, and this is, I assume that you are a Jew. As a Jew, you have to ask yourself, how is it possible that every few decades you bring a Holocaust on yourself? How is it possible that the history of the Jewish people is a chain of disaster? Show us Holocaust. I believe that once Jews are brave enough to ask this question, by the way, in some part, in some moments in history, they did. They may be able to move on, not necessarily. For instance, in the beginning of the 20th century, or let's say in late 19th century, Bernard Lazare, who was a Zionist, asked himself exactly the same question. Early Zionists, as you may know, like Jabotinsky and Nordau,
Spinoza.
And Herzl. And who?
Spinoza.
Spinoza wasn't an early Zionist. Who did you say? Nordau.
Yes, Spinoza.
I heard Spinoza.
Okay.
No, yeah, exactly. Nordau, Jabotinsky, Borokhov, all the streets in Tel Aviv, basically, in central Tel Aviv, they were very critical on diaspora Jewish identity, and they predicted that the Jews are about to bring a disaster on themselves, and they were correct. Their diagnosis was correct. The remedy was a complete disaster. And you and me are the product of the disaster. Now, what was the Holocaust denial? There are no Holocaust deniers in the world. Those people.
We have a problem with the numbers. That I understand. We have a problem with the numbers.
I don't care. I really don't care about the numbers. Okay. I really don't care about the numbers. For me, if 60,000 people are murdered for being black, Palestinian, Muslims or Jews, it is a disaster. The numbers is not an issue. The issue here is whether we can talk about the past without being terrorized by one Jew or another. And now, this is the issue.
I don't think I made you feel uncomfortable.
I don't have any issue with you, but at all. And I don't have any. By the way, it's very hard to make me feel uncomfortable. I passed this stage, but the issue here is that this is a tactic that is very common, used by Jews and their Sabbath goyim in the left, their caretakers. Now, you had another question. What was the other question that you asked me? You gave me two questions.
Have you been in the army? You've been very radicalized only lately. What was the reason that you got so radicalized against the Jews?
Jews. I'm not against Jews. I'm very much against Jewish
Israel.
Identity. No. Listen, let me tell you.
Okay.
Against Jewish identity politics. I actually believe the Jewish left. The Jewish left is actually more dangerous than Zionism. Because at least with Zionists or Israeli politicians, with Netanyahu, with Bennett, with Lieberman, we know exactly where they are standing. When it comes to Jewish left, so they are a form of manifestation of the Jewish of what we regard as Jewish problem. But the left, people like Max Blumenthal, Miko Peled, Noam Chomsky. These people that are engaged 24/7 in concealment of the issues and diverting the attention from the real problem. So I actually believe that all...
I am 100% from support for speech and anyone who thinks that he does the right thing, I support it 100%. As an Israeli, I can tell you that I support the freedom of speech completely. And you're doing a great job.
By the way, this is a very good point. Because as much as I oppose Israel, I don't know if you know, but last month I was invited to be on a VIP, a Big Brother in Israel. I don't know if you have Big Brother show in America, so I don't know if you understand what.
So
I had my views being explored in Israeli press. Here you are. You're an Israeli. You are not afraid of talking to me. Israel is way ahead of the West, of Britain, America, France, when it comes to issues.
Have you been to IDF?
Yes, for sure.
She was asking if you're an Israeli soldier.
Yeah, for sure. I said affirmative. I was an Israeli soldier between 81 to 84.
Okay, thank you so much. You answered my questions.
Bless you. Bye-bye.
Great. Thank you, Dana, for calling. Anyways, Gilad, you were stating in your book on how in the West the Israelis are actually, or not the Israelis, but the Jewish left antagonizes the citizens of those countries or anybody that speaks about Israel in those countries.
Sorry, ask me again. I didn't hear you very well.
I said, I had listened to you in other interviews and stuff like that, and you talk about how the Jews are pretty much terrorizing a lot of the other nations and people than the other nations. You pointed out people like Alan Dershowitz and a lot of the Jewish lobby here in the States that are getting us to go to wars.
Absolutely. It's quite pathetic. Alan Dershowitz, when you think about him now, that is complicit in a colossal, disgusting sex crime, that such a person could terrorize anyone. It's slightly pathetic. But those Jewish bodies and personals using different tactics. And as I mentioned, once you understand the Jewish power is the ability to block the discussion on Jewish power, you can see that they're using, something even opposing tactics. Like on the one end, you would have Alan Dershowitz that is biggest talent is his whiny, effeminate voice. When he's angry, he starts to scream like a slaughtered parrot. And it works very nicely on Fox News. I enjoyed a lot too when he shouted my name, kind of mezzo-soprano. But he can hardly produce an argument. At the most, he can lie, which is something that he's actually quite gifted in. But then you have the pseudo-humanist Democracy Now, that actually I regard them more Democracy Later, or Paul Jay on Real News, or who would present a diverse cultural attitude to the topic. But when a very important book comes out, like the book on the Israeli lobby by Mearsheimer and Walt, they work very hard to conceal the message. And instead of running a debate between Mearsheimer and an intellectual opponent, they just brought Noam Chomsky to talk about the book. You know, how pathetic is that? So they use those tribal operators in our midst are using different tactics and sometimes opposing tactics. And by the way, they're very gifted in it. They're doing it for 3,000 years. And it is hardly surprising that they've managed to Zionize American society. But I can see that... And it happens always. American people start to gather that something is uniquely wrong.
Well, okay, I've got Mao from Norway. I guess he got disconnected. He's calling back with a follow-up question. Go ahead, Mao.
Thank you very much. Shalom, Gilad. I got disconnected. I wanted to ask you, you know, because there is a lot of discussion regarding people having post-Zionist views. They want to see a future in Israel / Palestine without Zionism. How would you say that these kind of people are making their presence known? People like you and people like Ilan Pape and other known people who are struggling against the racism of Zionism.
To start with, Ilan may regard himself still as a post-Zionist. I've never been a post-Zionist. I've never been a Zionist. I don't think that Ilan was a Zionist, and this is why I think that regarding himself as a post at a certain stage was slightly clumsy.
Did I hear you correctly? Did you say that you don't consider him Ilan Pape as a post-Zionist?
Yeah, no, I said that at a certain stage he regarded himself as a post-Zionist. I don't know if he still regards himself as a post-Zionist. You have to ask him. You know, the post-Zionist kind of trend was something that happened in the 90s. I don't think that any of them regard themselves anymore as as post-Zionist. I think that Pape moved away from these views. Benny Morris became ultra-Zionist, and so on and so on. So the question. I argue that Zionism, anyway, is something that is totally irrelevant to Israeli politics, and I think that a person that would share my views is Avrom Burg, who, a guy that I actually appreciate. I like to read him. He's an intelligent guy, quite rare in this discourse, but he's one of those people with a kind of a lot of brain.
My final question to Gilad, is...
No, wait. Avrom Burg says, and I said the same thing in my book, Zionism is something that is foreign to Israeli society. Zionism was the promise to bring the Jews to Palestine and to establish a state. In 1948, this state was established. Since then, the Israelis, who are belligerent or believe in the national ethos, are regarded Israeli patriots. They are not Zionists. In Israel, we didn't learn how to be Zionists. We learned how to be patriots and maybe to join the army and to die. This is a very different concept. And this is why Zionism doesn't mean a lot to Israelis. And we have to learn to stop to talk in this idiotic, foolish, misleading terms. These terms are there to mislead. They are just there to make a few Jewish leftists identify within as Jews, yet not as Israeli supporters. Zionism is something that may mean a lot to diaspora Jews. But when you talk about Israeli politics, don't mention Zionism. It doesn't exist.
Okay,
thank you. And my final question to you is, how do you see the future? Do you see the future as a two-state solution or a one-state solution, one man, one vote, regardless of one's background, if the person is Jewish or Arab?
I would like to ask you a question. How would you react... I've been in your country, as you probably know, 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I gave a lecture in Trondheim.
Yeah, I heard about it.
Yeah, in Trondheim and in Oslo. How would you believe if I come to your country, to Oslo, and I start to tell you, listen, you Norwegian, you really got it wrong. You have some ethnic minorities here. You should do that and that and that and that. And you actually should stop fishing, and you should give up on your oil. And how would you be, you know, you would find it uniquely offensive, you know. And the truth of the matter that I've never heard Palestinians telling other people how to live. I've never heard Palestinians telling the Jews how to live. But I hear the entire universe, everybody tells the Palestinian how to live. One state, two states. Do you share your opinions about other countries? Why do we tell Palestinians or Israelis how they should live? What do you think? I ask you now. Why are you concerned with this question?
I think that it's a bit relevant in order to understand the conflict. That's why I wanted to know.
Do you also tell Americans what to do with Native Americans? You should.
There is a difference, but telling people what they should do. But everyone has a right to opinion and.
I'm in America now. The level of oppression, what we see in Baltimore, you know, it's quite devastating. And I don't see people all over the world telling the Americans what to do. All this one state, two state, again, this is the Jewish discourse that contaminates the Palestinian solidarity discourse, and I'll explain to you why. I'm not criticizing or attacking you. I wanted to galvanize the issue. I tell you why.
Sure.
It is very, very simple. We see the Jews starting to talk about one state, two state, two state, one state, one state, two state, and they talk about one democratic secular state. Now, they believe that they have the right to tell the Israelis how to live because Israel defines itself as the Jewish state. So actually, by opposing the Jewish state, they actually affirming that Israel is the Jewish state. And if they affirm that Israel is the Jewish state, so I don't want them to tell me anymore, not in my name. So Israel is the Jewish state, it's their state, and they should be screwed up with it. It's none of our business. This is the issue. They are playing a duplicitous narrative here. And I think that if Palestinians want the state, and they should have the state, they have to fight for it. And you know what is our role as humanists? To fight with them, to fight with them, to support the resistance, to support the Hamas.
Yeah, are you saying that we should have some kind of solidarity? Because I completely agree with you that we should have solidarity with them.
Real solidarity. And by the way, in Norway, you are the only country in the world that present real solidarity. With the Gazan, with the Hamas, with the, you know, every time I come to Norway, I meet people who come back from Lebanon, from En Hilwe, from Syria, from Yarmouk, from the refugee camps, from Gaza. It's incredible. You are the only country
I see
in the world that got this notion of solidarity. You know why? You know why the Norwegians are so good? Because your solidarity movement is not dominated by Jews. You have a bit of a few lefty Trotskyites, they are very old, they will die soon, and then you will be liberated completely.
But isn't that a bit harsh to say that that Norway's solidarity is because they don't have Jews? There are probably a lot of Jews who are today against the
I don't see anything harsh with it. He's just stating a fact there, Mal.
In Norway, you have a very small Jewish community, and your solidarity movement is not dominated by JVP, by Jewish Voice for Peace. And this is why your solidarity in Norway is real, you know, like, and all, continually, you have Norwegian doctors operating in Gaza, in doctors and nurses in Gaza, in the refugee camps. It is a very unique solidarity. I'm not aware of any, obviously. I have my friend Christopher Oberlin from Paris who do the same thing, but in Norway it is really institutionalized and it's beautiful. Salute, kudos.
Thank you very much, Gilad, for answering my questions, and it was very interesting, by the way, to when we had you over here in Norway. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
All right. Well, you're listening to The People Speak. We'll be right back with our guest, Gilad Atzmon.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit UNICEFUSA.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You're listening to Rock Cash Live on The People Speak. We're back with our guest, Gilad Atzmon. Gilad, you're going to be in the West Coast. We know you're in Colorado today, but you're going to be in the West Coast sometime this weekend. Can you please let our listeners know where you're going to be?
Yeah, I will be at 4 p.m. at the Levantine Cultural Center in L.A. Let me see if I have the address. It's Pico Boulevard, 5998 West Pico Boulevard, Los Angeles. And the day after, I'll be in San Diego. And let me see if I can see Cardiff by the Sea Branch Library. And all the information is available. And I'm then continuing to Madison and Chicago and Seattle and Portland and Houston and Texas. All the information is available on wanderingwho.com or on my website.
Great. That's the wanderingwho.com. Make sure you guys, if you're on the West Coast or anywhere in these cities that he's visiting, please go meet up with him. He's a wonderful person to talk to. Gilad, can you explain to us how they're actually terrorizing the people of the West when people speak about Israel and stuff? You know, they attack with these sentiments of Holocaust denier, and I've been called a Jew hater and anti-Semite.
I think that the general pattern, obviously, anti-Semite is a one slayer and Holocaust denier is another. But if we want to formalize it, you know, I'm a philosopher, so I like to make generalizations. Essentialist generalization. I'm the most politically incorrect person on this planet. The general pattern is political correctness. What is political correctness? Political correctness is politics that doesn't allow opposition. Politics that doesn't allow opposition or criticism is basically the definition of dictatorship. However, political correctness is much more dangerous than a dictatorship, because in a dictatorship, you may dislike a tyrant or a leader or an institution, but these are external to you. So you're German in 44 and said, you know, I don't like Hitler, and you maybe share it with someone. But in the someone near to you. But in the case of political correctness, it is us. It is us who suppress ourselves. It's a form of self mutilation, castration, censorship. It is horrid. And what we see in the West is that we didn't just lose our capacity to say what we think. We actually lost our capacity to think. Because every time we start to think authentically, you know, we have all these kind of red lights start to blip. And then next thing, we just, you know, suppress our ability to come with a genuine idea or even to contemplate one.
Right. And you've also spoken about the push to wars, like the war in Iraq was the work of Wolfowitz and also Alan Dershowitz. How would Alan Dershowitz be involved in that push?
Alan Dershowitz is, I don't know necessarily whether he is directly involved as with the neocon school, because he's not an intellectual. They were a bunch of intellectuals, very sinister ones. Alan Dershowitz's role in this Jewish organismus is different. Alan Dershowitz is there to implement measures of Jewish power. Alan Dershowitz is there to jump on you as soon as you connect the obvious fact that the neoconservative is a Jewish Zionist school with Israel. As soon as you come with the obvious observation that these, and they are still, were Zionist wars, you will have Alan Dershowitz jumping on you from the right, and Noam Chomsky jumps on you on the left. They are basically twins, and it's quite quite devastating. But we once we admit that their project was very, very successful. Look what they did to the Middle East.
Right.
Look what they did. What these people did to the Middle East. It's astonishing.
Correct.
How many years? How many centuries will it take to recover from this fantasy of interventionism?
Right.
Just 2-3 years ago, it was Bernard-Henri Lévy, who proudly said on French TV, "I liberate Libya as a Jew." Look at Libya now.
Yeah, it's in turmoil.
This man is to take responsibility and regard himself as a mass killer.
Well, it seems like they don't take responsibility for anything but like to dictate everything.
By the way, there is a reason why these people don't take responsibility. In the Christian and in the Islamic world, there is this notion of universal ethics. In Jewish culture, we have kind of a materialist solution. We have Yom Kippur. Once a year, we kind of do a business with God, and we sort everything out. We throw some bread into the river, and God forgive us. And this is, you know, we can start again to rob, to kill, and so on and so on. And this is a very crucial difference, and especially when it comes to assimilated and secular Jews, because when it comes to rabbinical Jews, Orthodox Jews, they may have exactly the same problem or the same issues, but they were living in a very isolated, secluded, segregated societies. So even if they had, and don't say that they had, but even if there was a sinister element in their culture, you know, this didn't turn into a genocidal approach towards other nations.
Right,
but when it comes to secular assimilated Jews who are living with us, you know, their politics. I'm not talking about all Jews. I'm talking about the Jews who operate Jewish politically as Jews. And we can talk about the Bolshevists, about the Bund, about the Jews who went to kill Christians in Spain in 1936 in the name of a war against fascism. We can talk about the neoconservatives. We can talk about Zionism, Israel. These are uniquely dangerous people.
Yeah, that's a funny thing in the chat room earlier, Jews were trying to say that they never attacked anybody, and that seems to be
true. It's true when it comes to rabbinical Jews. It is true. By the way, it is true as a collective. But you know, if you look at the war that were funded by the Rothschild families, along the years, you know, Nathan the Rothschild is probably the most famous case. You see that that Jews were involved in funding some atrocious acts, but it is still true to say that Jews as a collective, the rabbinical Jews, were not didn't attack anyone. However, once they go out of the ghetto, and they are very clever people, things start to change. And this is very, very interesting. And I am writing quite a lot about it. The problem that we have with the Jews is not with the religious Jews, but actually with the secular Jews. Zionism was a secular Jewish movement. Bolshevism, at large, a secular Jewish movement. Neoconservatism, a secular Jewish movement, and so on and so on and so on. This is very, very. This is very concerning, very frightening, and it is more even frightening when you understand that these are largely Jewish leftists. Yeah. Right. So even the neoconservatives who are right wing, they are the sons of the daughters of those who fought in Spain in 1936. They actually present a pseudo-ethical narrative. They talk about moral intervention, which is kind of basically a left narrative.
Great. I've got a question. Actually, I've got Mike on the line, Mike Kim, with a question on line two. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello, Gilad. My question for you, are any of the political candidates running for president truly in support of Palestine, or are they pretty much like gatekeepers as well? They're actually Zionists.
You're talking about America now?
Yes.
Okay, let me tell you something. I have a new book coming out, yeah? In a week or two. This is why I'm touring here. I'm just signing copies. And it's basically a lexicon. It's basically a lexicon of Israeli perception of the world. It's called A to Zion. And our definition for an American president is a person who managed to buy the trust of the Jewish lobby. You cannot run to American presidency unless you have the Jews backing you up. Now, this is definitely a disaster at the heart of your political system. It's an issue that you have to deal with because we are talking here about a foreign lobby that dominates your political system and definitely international affairs. This is a disaster. It made America into an evil state in the eyes of many people around the world. Financially, you are not doing very well either. You have to deal with it. This is your
job.
How
do you deal with that outside of overthrowing the United States government?
I think I will surprise you. I'm not an activist. I don't believe in activism. I don't believe that people walking in the street with banners and shouting slogans that they don't even think through is the solution. This is an idiotic leftist method that's actually there to dismantle real dissent. Your opposition, the thing that made America into one of the greatest places in the history of humanity is your First Amendment. First Amendment is there to tell you that you have the right to say what you think, to express yourself. Now, the Jewish lobbies are working hard to destroy this amendment. Political correctness is there to suggest the complete opposite. But if you start to say what you think and express your thoughts and your belief, you will save yourself, you will save your country, you will save your family, and because you are a superpower, you may as well save the world.
Thank you, Gilad, and I think we need to have you on again.
And come to my show.
All right. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Gilad, let's talk about Judaism, and let's talk about you know, these secular Jews that are claiming to be of God's children, but we know that sometime in history there was mass conversions all over where people converted to Judaism. So that doesn't necessarily make them the ancestors of the land, does it?
There is no doubt in my mind that the only real Jews with roots in Zion are obviously the Palestinians. This is something that pretty much every person who deal with this topic agree upon, and it is totally obvious that the Jews, as we know them now, have very little in common with any people who lived ever in Palestine. And what we see is a spiritually motivated, plunderous project that is surprisingly very, very successful. Now, why it is successful? A lot, because the nations were very happy to get rid of the Jews. If you read what Churchill wrote about Jews in the early 20th century, it's quite fascinating. He said Jews, he didn't like diaspora Jews. The only Jews that he liked were Zionists, because they were taking the Jews out of Britain.
Correct. You mentioned General Patton earlier, but General Patton also mentioned that when he went into Germany, that the German people were the only victims.
By the way, when I said General Patton, but when I said General Patton, I realized that it sounded like General Patton, and it was very, it was kind of slightly funny for me. Okay, so ask me the question about General Patton and Germany.
General Patton stated before he was killed that the only victims in Germany were the German people.
Yeah, this is quite amazing, because at the moment I'm looking into this story. This is something that people don't talk about. The genocidal tactics that were used during the war and after the war by Brits and Americans against German civilians are with no precedent in the history of humanity. Just if you think about carpet bombardment, you know, flattening city after city after city, Hamburg and Cologne and Berlin, and killing hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians. Now, there is something that people don't speak about. Why? Why what is the name of the Hitler architect? I'm getting old. When the chief of staff of Hitler, Speer, when Speer was captured, he asked General Patton very simple question. He told him, listen, from 1943, you had air superiority over Germany. You could finish the war in 2 weeks. Why didn't you? And the answer is that the real enemy for the British and the Americans was Stalin, the Red. And as long as the German army was fighting Stalin, there was no any reason to finish the war. So instead of throwing bombs on military targets, we flattened cities. We killed millions of Germans, and then the war was over. And what Germany went through then, through concentration camps, millions of German soldiers were kept in inhuman conditions, and hundreds of thousands of them died. Patton saw it all the way through. This was a policy that was at large pushed by Eisenhower. General Patton issued a lot of complaints. He saw the devastation, and it is indeed a chapter in history that nobody is yet to deal with appropriately. Very embarrassing chapter.
Some say that Eisenhower might have been a Jew himself.
Only once been with him in the swimming pool, and I had the same. No, I don't know. I don't know. yeah, I don't know.
Let's go back to Judaism. Weren't they ordered by God to be rabbinical and not political?
For sure. This is why we don't have problem with Judaism. Judaism is saturated with a lot of very problematic verses and teachings, and yet it wasn't the rabbinical Jews who ethnically cleansed the Palestinians. It wasn't the rabbinical Jews who starved millions of Ukrainians in the Holodomor. It wasn't the rabbinical Jews who burned churches in Spain. These are the most beautiful, progressive left Jews.
Correct.
This is very, very embarrassing. And I'm probably the first one to say it in a very clear manner, without leaving any room for doubts. This is the history of the 20th century. It's a story of continuous Nakbas committed by Jewish leftists.
So what do you have to say to Americans that are in the situation now where they see their country going to the wayside? Being caused by the economical situation.
You have First Amendment. John Stewart, Sylvia, start to see, to say what you think, what you believe.
Yeah, well, it's not just the First Amendment. It's not just the First Amendment they seem to be after. It seems to be that they're after the First, the Second.
You have to start to say what you think, rather than gathering together or sharing idiotic pictures on Facebook. Start to say what you think. I'll tell you what is the problem here. The problem in your country. You know, I visited last year in Detroit. You know, you were the most productive country on this planet. What is left out of it? You are a bunch of consumers.
Yes.
Say it. We want to work. When you came to this country, there was future awaiting for you. What is awaiting for your kids?
Absolutely nothing, as far as I can see.
Paying $50,000 a year in university to have a degree that was nothing, because Jeffrey Epstein, a dirty pedophile, gives money to Harvard, so another a Jewish fraudsters Dershowitz get a professorship. This is what. You know, this is the universities that charge £50,000 a year. This is the problem. Say it. Learn to say it. We want to clean this society, to make it a Christian society driven by goodness and universal right. Maybe this is what, this is my dream. This is my loving memory of America. You know, there is something beautiful about the people here. Still.
Right. I agree. Yes, we do deserve more. Now, what do you have to say to American Christianity that has been deceived by the Zionist onslaught here in the USA and in Europe? These Shabazz Christians, the evangelicans and the born-again Christians.
Make sure that in Christmas you have as many trees around. And when you see a Hanukkah, or whatever they call it here, I don't know, you know, this Jewish Hanukkah thing.
Hanukkah,
yeah. You know, you see these lights, you know, allow yourself to show your disgust. Because unlike Christmas, all the Jewish holidays, as they are interpreted now, you know, some people would say that within rabbinical Judaism, they were not violent. All the Jewish holidays, as they are perceived now by most Jews, are feasts around holidays that are set around violent incidents. You know what is a Jewish, you know, this is a joke, you know, what is a Jewish holiday? They try to kill us, we won't, let's eat. You know, so Pesach, you know, so Passover is because the Egyptians tried to kill us, so we eat matzah bowl. Purim is because Achashverosh want to kill us, so we eat the ears of Aman. You know, they have cake that is called Aman's ear. You know, it's brutal, man. It's cannibalism.
Right, and in the beginning, you said that Islam is. Also, in a sense, following the Jewish onslaught also, or
no,
how
no,
do you explain?
I have no issue with Islam as much as I don't have issue with Judaism, you know. Obviously, some Muslims are doing some horrible things at the moment, but we have to look at it. We have to look at it in the light of the occupation they were subject to for decades. You know, and still, if you spoke about General Patton and Eisenhower, you know, in comparison to what we did to the Germans, Great Britain, and America. You know, the fact, there is something that people don't speak about. I have a friend of mine just kind of enter, you know, because we'll have to finish soon. And he's a pilot, and it will be very interesting to hear what is American pilot, to hear what he thinks about it. You know, what bugs me is the fact that America developed these tactical bombers. Yeah, like B-25, B-26, B-17. Britain developed the Lancasters from the late 1920s, early 1930s. And these planes are designed to flatten cities. They are designed to kill innocent people. The Germans didn't have any tactical bombers. Dead rockets, but the rockets, you know, like a Scud missile, V2, V1, V1. You know, they destroy three houses. It's quite devastating. When it comes to Britain and America, we had strategy. You know, and it's not something that's a factory decide to produce. When you produce a plane. It's a very long process, a very long decision making, you know, and it's a governmental approval. you know, these planes were designed to flatten, to kill millions. And then it is not surprising that it was actually America that produced the atomic bomb using German Jewish scientists. And it's not surprising that after the war, America developed the B-52 that is there to flatten countries, not just cities. So when we talk about Muslims that slay one person's throat, it's minor in comparison with the colossal crimes we inflicted on this planet.
Correct. I've got a question from Lisa in Alabama. She wants to know...
I don't talk to people in Alabama. I'm joking.
She wants to know if you think that Hitler was used as a tool or whether he had a hand in establishing Zionism as a fictitious corporate name.
I'm aware of all these stories. I am not an historian. When I'm asked questions about Israel, I can usually provide good answers because I can read the text in Hebrew, I can read it in English. But when it comes to such a question, I'm not an historian. I'm aware of those narratives. But in order to answer such a question, I have to read the text in German, many texts in German, and it's not something that I'm willing to do. But everything is possible.
Right, because I've seen some old newspapers here in the States that were put out on a YouTube video where they're stating that in Ukraine and in Russia, the 6 million number kept popping up in six different countries, where 6 million were being persecuted in Ukraine, 6 million being persecuted in Russia, Poland.
It's a nice round number.
Right, and they were using it.
And you know, our generation, you probably remember Steve Austin.
Yes.
Do you remember Steve Austin? He was the $6 million man.
$6 million man, there you go. There you go. Very good point. And that, you know why?
You know why? Because this is something that nobody knew. It was a $6 million because he was probably also a Holocaust survivor. I don't know.
Yeah. That was very
but
funny.
But you know that I'm a Holocaust survivor. Did you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I survived all the indoctrination.
Yes, I was going to say the same thing because I'm that survivor also. Because I refuse to be indoctrinated by anybody. I've always been a free thinker. So God bless you, Gilad. God bless. Is there anything more
I will have to leave soon, so maybe we have to wrap it up.
What I was getting to. Thank you for staying the extra 25 minutes, though.
Pleasure. I will be happy to do it every time, but you know there is a kind of a small party, and I see a lot of friends waiting to say hello, and they all have to be quiet. It's quite embarrassing. I'll be delighted. Please make an effort to come to see me.
Yes, I will. I will try. And
tell all your Palestinian friends.
I will. I will tell all everybody I know to make it out there to the theater and try to see you. I will let my friends in San Diego know also.
Please.
Thank you so much for joining us, Gilad Gottesman. It's been a wonderful show. My audience thanks you very much. And
pleasure, man.
One last question from Dana that you spoke with on the phone earlier. She wants to know where your parents came from.
My parents were born in Palestine. They both have Palestinian birth certificate like your parents.
Thank you. With that, we'll let you go. Gilad, have a great day. Enjoy, and I hope
you're playing lots of
music while you're here.
Yeah, I will. Bye, brother.
Bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.